All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type helicopter pilot, Vietnam, 1969. Welcome to our program. This is kind of a really special deal we've got going today because we've got experts, real live experts on home health care and hospice care and palliative care and all of those different types of things from one particular organization. So if you have any questions and you would like to get some advice, you can call us here on Veterans Radio. The number is 734-822-1600. My co-host today is, for those of you who have been listening to our benefits programs, is retired Air Force General, Brigadier General Carol Ann Falzone. She is a nurse and she also works with Legal Help for Veterans. So, Carol Ann, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Dale. This is a first, and hopefully I could be a good wing person for you today.
I'm always looking for wing persons to help out. So we're going to be talking with people from residential health in just a moment. But first of all, we have to make sure that we thank our sponsors, because as you all know, we can't do this program without sponsorship. That's you. I'm pointing at the screen right now. So before we get along too long, I want to make sure that we thank our loyal sponsors. And number one is Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans disability claims. You can give them a call at 800-693-4800, or you can go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, that's nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. If you want to do business with the federal government and you are a veteran-owned business, you got to get certified, and they're the only ones that can do it. So make sure that you go to nvbdc.org. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information about them, you can go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. We've also got the people I mentioned earlier. We've got residential home health and hospice care for veterans and their families. For more information, go to residentialhealthcaregroup.com or give them a call. This is a number we were just talking about earlier, 866-902-5854. They'll answer a call and direct you where you need to go. If you need more information about their organization, I'm supposed to mention this, I just got a text, is you can go to our website, veteransradio.org, and all this information is on today's program listing there. We also want to thank our local veterans organizations for their longtime support. We've been doing this for 20 years, and we couldn't have gotten started without these guys. So the Irwin Prescott American Legion Post 46, and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. So thank you all very much for your continued support. We're very grateful for that. And if you are listening to the program today and you want to support us, you can go to our website. That's veteransradio.org. Hit the donate button. Have at it. 20 years. So we're asking for $20 for 20 years. That's a pretty good run, I think. And we're pretty excited about that. All right, so let's get into the program right now. And we've got a lot of people on our screens. And so we're going to be talking today. Let's start off with Nate Barnett. Nate is the regional director for the Residential Healthcare Group. So, Nate, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. It's a pleasure here to be with you today.
Okay, I've been throwing out different names here for the name of your company. And so what should I go by?
Well, we are Residential Healthcare Group, and who we are is a home health, palliative, and hospice care organization that provides care in the home, and the home is wherever you are.
Okay, so that's, if people were looking you up, they're going to go to residentialhealthcaregroup.com, correct?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. So you run, you're the regional director. How big is residential healthcare?
Well, here in the state of Michigan, we cover the entire Mittens, all the way up to the bridge, down to the Ohio border. And then we have other locations in Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Kansas, and Florida.
Okay. So people out there listening, they're everywhere. They're everywhere, which is great, which is cool.
And Dale, you know, with the cost of healthcare, this is really significant because people want to remain at home. They want to remain at home with their families, and residential is a really good business. It's a really good service because, Nate, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't you also affiliated with the VA also across the region?
Yep. So here specifically in Michigan, we are contracted with VA Optum, so we are able to work with the VA's payer source. The way we are structured to work with our VA hospitals here in Michigan is that we have transition nurse liaisons assigned to each of the hospitals that work with the Office of Community Care to get veterans home if they're discharging, or to get them the services that they're needing if they've seen their VA PCP.
And I think that's really important because, as we all know, our loved ones do truly want to stay at home and get the good care, and the assistance that they need, to remain there as long as possible. So this is pretty neat, Nate. So we're really glad to get you and the whole team of residential, out there and to be, partnering with Veterans Radio.
Yeah, like I said, thanks for having us. We're excited to be here to kind of speak to the audience about what our care looks like and what we do.
Well, I wanted to make sure that our audience knew that we're not, you know, this is not strictly for veterans. Some of the information, much of the information you're going to get here today applies to civilians as well. I don't mean civilians, but, you know, regular folk out there. It's just that they have a specialty that deals with veterans in the veteran community. But if you know, if you're not a veteran, still need to pay attention, because I think you're going to find out there's a lot of good information that they can provide for you. So Nate, you not only do residential care, you also provide palliative care. You provide hospice care, correct?
Yep, that's right. So we offer the entire continuum of care, which includes home health, palliative care, and hospice care. And it's really a unique offering because we're able to help people with home health therapy services, get them back on their feet. And with our continuum, we can actually transition people to palliative, to hospice care when it's the appropriate time for them. So we got you covered either way.
Okay. So I want to introduce two other folks. We've got Dustin Dodge and Nick Capolino, and both of them are involved with more of the residential care. Is that correct, Nick? I'll go to you first.
So I'm the regional director for the hospice branch.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. You're on, and I'm a veteran myself. And then Dustin Dodge he's with the home care side of it. He's the nurse specialist with the home care.
Okay, I'm going to go over to Dustin then.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, Dustin, I know you all work together, but.
Yeah, and so I'm the transition nurse liaison, and I work mostly with Saginaw and North, but we have a liaison for each of the VA hubs. So, and we work real closely with hospice too to get the patient to like the right level of care, because sometimes they don't know when they're coming out of the hospital. We try to help them with that transition.
So for instance, let's suppose that I have been hospitalized for a while for a heart problem, and as I'm getting discharged and they say, okay, we can't do anything more for you here. You need to go home. And does the VA handle this, or do they direct me toward one of you? I'll go to Dustin, to you first.
Well, it depends on the VA. That's why we have a liaison for each one, because they do things a little bit different. There's little nuances for each system there. So we get a lot of referrals up north from other facilities. And so I get those, I send in the request for the authorization and get them all set up with the home care or whatever they need. But sometimes we also get the referrals directly from the VA. So I guess it's kind of a mixed bag. But we take whatever we get and we make it work. So we just get them the services that they need for VA Optum.
So if I have to go to, need home health care, so I have to get some sort of authorization from the VA or my doctor.
From the VA to pay for it. So we work directly with the community care liaisons from the VA.
Yes.
And so we submit all the information that they requested plus along the referral that we get from the hospital or the rehab. And then we tell them what services are needed, why they need home care. And they in turn send us that authorization that allows for us to bill VA Optum and covers them 100% for 180 days. And then they recert if there's still some skill needed or if it's a short-term thing where they just need medication management. They'll go once a week to fill up a pill box. And so it's really geared to whatever they really need. And then we also work with the home-based primary care too. So like, if a home-based primary care nurse from the VA is going out, we'll stop nursing, but we'll continue therapy and we'll just supplement what they aren't able to, you know, cover in the area. If that makes sense.
So Dale, I think this is why it's really important in some of our other programs that we talk about. If you're a veteran and you're going into the hospital, the emergency room, wherever, that you identify yourself that you are a veteran, that the hospital understands that you're a veteran. So the discharge planners, the social workers, they can notify the VA right away within the period of time so that they could get it all approved and so that the veteran and their family are not paying for that bill, so that the paperwork already starts to flow, so that as Dustin just described, when it's time for discharge, the bill and the process are going to be taken care of by the VA, and you've got companies and payers like, you know, residential setting up the paperwork to go back to the VA to get the approval. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, and it's really easy too. I'm a veteran myself. And so, of course, I had to go to the ER a couple months ago for something, and you just say VA Optum. There's a number they call, an after hours number, and it's all taken care of. It's really, people don't know about it. So that's the key, really getting them informed and what the options are.
Right. I think that is obviously really important, that whatever hospital you go to make sure that, you know, you let them know that you are a veteran. And you don't have to pay. You don't have to pay them direct. Let the VA take care of it, and that will leave a lot of stress, I know, for a lot of people. Yes, Nate.
I was just going to say, Caroline, you bring up a really good point to get that paper trail rolling as quickly as possible. When it's a discharge where the VA is not notified prior to the discharge, that's where we run into issues where care is delayed. So certainly, the sooner the better.
Well, you know what? I've gotten engaged. I can't tell you how many times when a family calls and they're like in distraught because they've gotten these large bills, $20,000, $40,000. And if surgery has incurred, because of something that was an emergency or the ICU and they've got these catastrophic bills, it's like, I'm a veteran. How come the VA is not picking it up? Well, did you identify yourself? So I can't oversimplify and stress the importance. If you are a veteran, you really need to identify yourself that, you know, at the VA and to let individuals know so that that doesn't occur.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so we've got that part. Make sure everybody know you're a veteran. Wear your hat or whatever it is that you need. Make sure you have your card so you can show them your magic card. So when I am, you know, going back to this hypothetical situation that I might find myself in, is that once I am getting ready to be discharged and my doctor says, Dale, there's the journey's almost over. So first of all, I'm going to go into the home health care. What benefits can I anticipate with that? Am I going to get 24-hour care? Is it going to be a nurse? Is it going to be any sort of therapy? What is going to be offered to me?
So with home care, it's more of a short-term kind of focused approach to get patients our veterans back to their baseline that before they, whatever happened, happened. So, say they had a heart attack or a stroke, we're really trying to determine what their previous baseline was. And through, nursing, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, a home health aide, and even social work, we work together in order to get that person back to whatever highest level of function that we think they can get to based on the evaluations. And so, there's a lot of in between there. So each discipline sets up their own goals and, monitors their own progress in the case conference weekly on each individual patient. And so it's really a collaborative team approach. But that's not the 24 hour part of it. That's really private duty and not a lot of insurances cover that, but we do help. There are some, you know, programs in the community, even the VA, that do more long-term care, for like the, your activities of daily living, things like that, you know, bathing, trips to the doctor, things like that. There are services out there. And that's the other thing with being identified as a veteran. Yeah, you get a lot more services that way too.
Okay, you mentioned an important point here is that the 24-hour care is not provided by any VA or entity, is it?
Not that I know of. I do know that they do have long-term care facilities that are with the VA. Sometimes they, I forget what they call, is it community living center? Yes, yeah, CLC. Mm-hmm. So they have those, but those are sometimes more short-term rehab too, but I do believe there are some long-term care facilities that people can actually go into like a living space. So I don't think there's very many of those though. So the biggest thing for us is if the patient isn't going to return to some sort of independence, or some baseline, we have to make sure that we have someone that's going to be there, like a caregiver. Say they have wound care, they have lots of different things. We have to make sure that someone is there that we can teach, or we're not really setting them up to regain their independence. We're just that's really our goal. And then once that part of it, the independence is like, well, maybe we need to refocus somewhere else. We bring in either our journey program, which is like a middle ground that helps us decide what do we want to do? Do we want to keep going back to the hospital or do we want more palliation? And then we can get our palliative MP involved. And then from there, maybe even hospice. But it's that, like Nate was saying, that whole continuum. So we really just talk to everybody to make sure we're getting that patient exactly what he wants.
So Dustin, help me please understand in our audience. So I've just come out of the hospital, as Dale described. Let's say I had a stroke. That seems to be recently what I'm hearing. And you get involved and you come and evaluate me. And you've just talked about a lot of disciplines, the PT, the OT, nursing, a home aide. How many hours would you say, and how many weeks might the insurance company approve me to come in? 2 weeks, 4 weeks to get me back, to how I was functioning? What on average would I be looking at?
It doesn't really go by hours. It goes by each individual assessments.
Okay.
So, and they'll set up a plan of care. And if it's therapy, they'll leave a home exercise plan so that the caregivers there can do the exercises. So it's really, really, patient driven. So it's not really like hours. And what was the first part of your question? I'm sorry.
Okay. So, well, with the different disciplines, how long would you think that we would be seeing these different disciplines coming into the home?
So, with the VA Optum and VA authorization, that first authorization is good for 180 days.
Okay.
Unlike where Medicare is usually 90 days.
Right.
And there has to be skill involved. With VA Optum and VA authorization, there doesn't really need to be skilled. They don't need to be homebound. That's one of the benefits of having the VA Optum. They don't have to have those Medicare requirements in a lot of cases, but the insurance works the same way as far as how they pay and, you know, compensate and all that kind of stuff. But the good thing about it is it's 180 days and we can continue as long as there's a need. It doesn't even have to be a skilled need. So that's a really good thing.
So As we know with rehab, if they're not keeping up with FEM scores and if the, you know, if you come and, I decide today, I don't want to do my exercises and the physical therapist leaves a certain period of time, you know, they're going to say, sorry, but I'm not coming back. So with you, the 180 days, do you just keep coming or do you have to prove that the patient is making some improvement?
Not really with VA Optum, because we can come, if they, maybe they just want to do therapy once a week, right? So maybe we put them on like a maintenance program where say they have a chronic condition, a degenerative condition that we all know is not going to get better, but we can maintain a level of function to where they're not regressing.
Okay.
So we really try to focus. I mean, we don't want to make anybody, you know, we're not trying to be drill sergeants and anything like that. So we're trying to make them do what they, things that they want to do and are capable of doing without being, because we're in their home, right? We're guests there. And so we want to, and that's how we try to present that as, you know, we're here to help you. And this is all your choice. We can leave, you know, sometimes they get a little combative because sometimes they think we're telling them what to do. And we're like, nope, we're trying to help you so that you don't have to have us anymore. We want, we, if we're here too long, we're not doing our job.
Okay.
So we really are trying to focus on that level of function, at the home health level. So.
So is it 180 days per calendar year or lifetime?
Oh no. We've had some veterans on for years. So we just keep getting the recert authorizations. Now they do have to have some sort of, to continue on with the home care for the VA Optum, they do need to know what we're doing. Because they try to transition, the VA will try to transition them to the home-based primary care through the VA because that's their team. So they have like nurse practitioners, they have physical therapists, they have nurses, but they don't go out too much farther from the hubs. So like Saginaw, they're really in Saginaw, you know, and then, or the, to the local CBOCs, which is the community-based outreach, community-based outpatient clinic. So, they don't go too far outside of those. So they have limited staff. That's why they bring in other companies.
Okay. We're talking with representatives here from the, residential home health care, palliative and hospice and everything else that you need to know about what happens when you're discharged. And, we want to encourage you, if you do have a question, to give us a call at 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. So once we've gone through the home health care options that are available, and it sounds like there are so many things that could be a whole separate program, sounds like, as far as what is available to you. And I really like the comment about, you know, you're non-combative. You're not there to, you know, to be drill sergeants for these people. You're trying to get them to, you know, maintain, I guess would be the word I'm thinking about, you know, getting them to be able to get up and move around again, getting them, you know, able to use the facilities, those kinds of things. You're not, if they do need 24-hour care, do you handle that or do you refer that out?
We can bring in a social worker. We can work with community mental health. We can work with the VA. There's lots of resources. Usually, like as transition nurses, we know a little bit about that, but not anything like a social worker would know. So we really defer to the social worker and they come in and evaluate, you know, everything, finances, what they got going on, what they need. You know, there's lots of resources out there. So we really defer to the social worker, or if there's any kind of mental health issue, we go to community mental health.
Okay. Well, all right. So kind of come to the end of that portion of what you folks can do for us. So now I'm slowly slowing down, you know, more and more as it goes along. Where is the point where hospice comes into play? And I'm going to move over to Nick on this one.
Sure. So Nick, yeah.
Where do we go from here?
Yeah. So usually there, you know, once you've kind of gotten to that point, your doctors are getting involved, whether it's your VA docs or if you've got some community docs. And the Medicare ruling says, and I'm going to, you know, you can't see me on the radio, but I'm putting this in air quotes, right? You know, if the doctors agree that if your terminal condition if the prognosis were to proceed the normal course, you'd have about 6 months to live, right? And I put normal in air quotes because everybody's different, right? Somebody with CHF, you know, they, you know, we get to that normal stage and they would say, hey, 6 months to live. We've seen some people pass, you know, pretty quickly. We've seen other people go on for years. A couple of years, we've had some people on hospice services. So, you know, I put that in air quotes because everybody's different. Everybody kind of progresses at different rates and stuff. So, if we get the referral from the doc, you know, to please eval and admit for hospice if appropriate, what we then do is we collect all the paperwork from either the VA or from the community doc. And then we get that into our office and we send a nurse out to do a start of care or an evaluation to make sure that the patient is medically appropriate for hospice, right? And there's a lot of folks that are, they meet that, the medical, you know, terminal diagnosis, but they're not mentally there yet. Meaning, they may totally qualify in that for that last 6 months, but they have to be, to the point where they're not seeking any more aggressive treatment, right? So for example, if you had cancer, right, and it's stage four and it's metastasized, you're no longer seeking the chemo, the radiation, or any more of that aggressive type treatment. You're choosing to be as comfortable as possible for as long as possible and get as much of the quality of life out of that, however long that is, whether it's a couple weeks, 6 months, or a couple years. You're getting as much of that out of that last stage of life as you possibly can. So we get that paperwork in, and when somebody's deemed appropriate, there's we have a nurse that will come out and see the patient. Now that everybody's plan of care is different too, right? So some people need a nurse's visit once a week. Some people need nurses visits 2 to 3 times a week. You know, everybody's got a different plan of care set up, but you get a nurse when you're on hospice. You also get a home health aide. And that's, again, that's the plan of care for that is established between the nurse and the family. And we also have medical directors. We have our own MDs that are part of the team that oversee the plan of care as well. Social worker, we got a medical social worker. Massage therapy, music therapy. We've got a volunteer services, which Leah heads up. We've got a whole bunch of different things that we can offer. We really bring a really highly specialized quality team together to really help not just that patient, right, but also the family members. Because the family members, it's, you know, this is really taxing on the family members as well. And so we're there for them too. Right? A spiritual care advisor. We have chaplains. You know, that's the old term that all of us are used to, especially within the military, right? The chaplains, but we call them spiritual care advisors now. So it's a very highly specialized team that comes together and to keep, again, I can't beat this drum enough, to keep that quality of life, for as long as possible and to keep them as comfortable as possible.
So Nick, that was awesome. Dale, I wanted to just say you jumped from, from discharge and working with Dustin. And then we jumped to hospice, but I do believe there's another step in the meantime, and that was palliative. And, before we jump to, you know, the hospice, Nick, would you say, and is that Michelle or is that Leah? What, because we got a couple other members, Dale, with residential that, I think there's some other functions in there. Nick, who would deal with the palliative and how would that fit in before we jump to hospice?
Well, there's on the call today, there's not really, I mean, Nate and all of us kind of specialize in the hospice, right? I'm sorry, not the hospice, but the palliative care.
Okay.
So really pretty much any of us on the call can answer it. But, you know, typically again, so, let's say that there may not even be a terminal condition that's, you know, it can be an acute condition. It can be a chronic condition. But it's something that's got some really unmanaged, a lot of unmanaged symptoms, maybe a lot of pain, stuff like that. So what we have is we have nurse practitioners that can come out to the house, and we're really trying to help manage those symptoms to keep, again, to keep the patient as comfortable as possible in their homes for as long as possible. The unique bridge with the palliative care is that you may have a terminal condition, right? Let's go back to the cancer, right? Just as an easy one. You may have a terminal condition like cancer, but you don't want to stop seeking that aggressive treatment yet. You still want to be going for the chemo and the radiation. You're still seeking that aggressive treatment. So you're not really appropriate for hospice yet, right? But that's where our palliative care team can come in and really help with those symptoms that come up from whatever that acute or chronic condition is. But you can still seek your aggressive treatment with your whether it's with the VA or with your other hospital organization that you're going to.
And I think the information that you've provided, and Dale, I think you brought it up in the very beginning, all the information that all of you are providing, it's great for a veteran, but it's great for any citizen, any individual out there to be listening and to call residential, because it could help anybody going through any disease, any pain element. And so it could help your family. So please keep that in mind. And if you do have a question, even if you're not a veteran, please call in and ask the team a question.
Yes, and that number is 734-822-1600. The residential's number is that I want you guys to give listeners to give them a call if you want to get more information. That's 866-902-5854, and they will then direct your call to wherever you need to go. Michelle Bedford is one of the hospice specialists, and so I wanted to bring her on the line along with Leah Farber, who is the also at hospice, and talking about volunteers. And I wanted to know a little bit more about how hospice really works. I mean, if I decide that, okay, I don't want to do any more medication, I just want to go quietly and peacefully, then I would contact you, right?
Absolutely. We can help in a variety of different ways. We care for patients with a variety of different terminal or end-stage diagnoses, really pulling together what Nick was talking about, pulling together a lot of information and trying to paint that picture as far as where that patient is with the disease trajectory and what's needed. Just like home care, our hospice plan of cares are very individualized to the patient. If a patient wanted to stop all medications, like you were speaking about, Dale, absolutely, we could help support that and just really focus on comfort. But a lot of time and education goes in with the patient and family talking about medications, desired effects, to help them make that decision whether they wanted to continue on particular medications and or stop. There are times when maybe they're seeking treatment outside of that terminal diagnosis, maybe going on what Nick was saying, just to keep things really simple for a cancer patient, maybe a lung cancer, but is also seeking dialysis. We can help support that also. So I always like to explain, the hospice plan of care is all different varying shades of gray because it is so individualized to meet that patient's need or desires.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like what residential does is that everything is individualized. It doesn't make it, there's no first you do this, then you do this, and then you do that. Everything comes in. And if I have a question, you can answer. I thought, one of the things that I feel is so important is the idea of supporting the family. And Leah, I'm going to ask you to jump on the line here, since I know you work with volunteers as well, is how do we get the family has to be included in all these decision-making processes. And so what is it that you would do to help the family out?
Well, what we try to do is we really try to focus on the quality of life and the comfort care, not only for the patient, also for the caregivers. We are a part of a program called We Honor Veterans, which is, it originated through the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, and they work in collaboration with the Department of Veteran Affairs. And what we do as a partner to that program is that, first of all, we spend a lot of time educating our staff. We do a lot of educational presentations around PTSD in veterans. We have a whole series of courses we offer specifically on Vietnam veterans. And we really work hard at having our team, our clinical care team, really feel confident in being able to work with people who are a part of a military culture. And so a lot of education is involved in that. In addition, we also try and do presentations and outreach to our veteran organizations. You know, I don't think it comes as any surprise that hospice isn't easy to talk about for most people. And yet there is so much available to be able to support the families and to be able to support people and offer them. I had a brother-in-law who was bedbound and on hospice for 2.5 years, and we couldn't have done it without hospice. I mean, they were there for us. And so I think that when you're talking about the whole system, you have to know that it's our social workers who will spend time. We also really spend a lot of time giving honor to our veterans. We want them to remain relevant. It's important that they know that the service that they have offered our country will always be important. And so we do pinning ceremonies. We're doing 12 Veteran Day events at a variety of facilities. We really draw attention to honoring and recognizing and creating a safe space where people can really begin interacting. We do some vet-to-vet cafes at our assisted living communities, and we find that when veterans are able to come together, that there is a sharing and a camaraderie that is, it's inclusive to the veteran community. And we want to be able to provide those opportunities where people can begin talking. We also find that as people near their end of life journey, that a lot of issues will come up that they haven't been able to talk about before.
I'm going to ask you to hold on here because we need to take a break real sure. fast here. So we're going to take our Medal of Honor break. And when we come back, we're going to ask everybody here to contribute to what, you know, what these questions are. Maybe we're trying to anticipate what your questions might be out there to our listeners. So you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Private First Class William Thomas lost both of his legs to an explosive charge thrown by Japanese soldiers in the Battle of the Philippines, but refused medical treatment. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Thomas was a member of the leading squad of Company B, which was attacking along a narrow, wooded ridge. The enemy, strongly entrenched in camouflaged emplacements on the hill, directed heavy fire and hurled explosive charges on the attacking riflemen. Thomas, an automatic rifleman, was struck by one of those charges, which blew off both his legs below the knees. He refused medical aid and evacuation and continued to fire at the enemy until his weapon was put out of action by an enemy bullet. Still refusing aid, he threw his last two grenades. He destroyed three of the enemy after suffering the wounds from which he died later that day. The effective fire of Thomas prevented the repulse of his platoon and assured the capture of the hostile position.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
We're back here on Veterans Radio, and we're talking to the entire company, I think, of the Residential Healthcare Group, which is a great opportunity for us to get this information out there about whether you need home health care, palliative care, hospice care, all the different things that are available to you, and the special kind of an upgraded system that the VA offers with extended care, which I found really interesting. I'm going to go back to Nate for just a second here to kind of figure out what we can do. So the question that I have is, can I do all of these at once, or am I kind of limited? Can I do home health care and hospice, or can I do home health care and palliative care? You know, what are my choices?
Well, traditionally, it's kind of a one or the other scenario where Medicare is not going to pay for aggressive treatment and then also hospice. There is a unique benefit that is offered through the VA called concurrent care. And the purpose of concurrent care is so that a veteran does not have to make that choice between giving up on that aggressive chemo treatment and go to hospice. It's a difficult decision for a lot of patients to have to make that choice. But concurrent care allows for a veteran to receive actually both. And so that's kind of a unique unique benefit that is offered to specifically veterans.
Okay.
I think the neat thing, Dale, that we're hearing today with residential is you've got experts before us that they've been talking, Dustin, Nate, Leah, Michelle, Nick, that they talk to one another. And if we get a patient, they get a patient, they talk, they understand the patient, the needs of that individual, whether a veteran or a lay citizen that needs help. And they talk among themselves to try to find out what is the best plan between the social worker, the nurse, to try to help and see how they could help that individual. And I think that's really important. Talking to the family, as Leah talked about, where does that individual need to be in their continuity of care to try to get them to the quality of life that they need to be? And palliative, you know, I think as a nurse, and working with a couple patients just recently, I don't think we know, enough about palliative, because I've seen it work extremely well just recently. Nick, and I'm glad you're shaking your head. You know, whether it's coming in and making the patient feel really comfortable with pain as they were going through chemo and helping them, you know, try to resume their activities of daily living. And it brought a great quality of care to their life with palliative care. And it is not hospice yet. I think one of you said that. And what but the society doesn't know, the community doesn't know enough about palliative care.
I agree. I guess the final question is, we've still got a little time to go, is what are the legal ramifications, or what are the legal requirements that the family should know about when somebody needs to go anywhere along those lines? Is this where we get into the medical power of attorneys or the legal power of attorneys? Who would be best to address that, do we think? Nick?
I think either Nate and I deal, I think, probably with those quite a bit. I was just, it's ironic that you bring that up, because I was just at lunch here with a family member that's going through some stuff with these power of attorney issues and all that. You know, the idea is that you get your power of attorney set up as early as possible. You know, a lot of people, you know, they kind of keep, you know, it's kind of like life insurance. Sometimes it's one of those things you kind of put off and you don't really want to talk about or whatnot, or burial services or something like that. But you're really doing your family a disservice. You need to get those, you know, if you're married and you got kids and you got a family, you need to get those in place as early as possible. And the idea behind the power of attorneys is, you typically there's two that you see that are talked about quite a bit. There's the financial power of attorney, and then there's the medical power of attorney, right? Where, you know, you're drawing up these papers while you're still in your right mind and before anything happens, before you're incapacitated in any forms, and you designate somebody. It could be a family member, it could be your spouse, it could be a friend. You designate somebody to make decisions for you when you can't make those decisions for yourself, right? Before Alzheimer's, before dementia, before a stroke, before something that puts you out to where you can't be, you know, to where you can't make the decision for yourself. You make those wishes known, you get the paperwork drawn up, and you get them signed. And that's something where Nate, you know, when somebody's on home care, we have our social workers that can help you get those, that paperwork done. When you're on palliative care, we've got our journey reps that they can help get those advanced care directives put into place. And then even we've got the folks on hospice that on the hospice team that can help get those drawn up. But you have your financial to make your financial decisions, and then your medical power of attorney to help make those medical decisions for you when you can't make them for yourself.
I think that that's so important. You know, most of us, as you mentioned, you know, we procrastinate with those things. You know, I'm never going to be sick. I'm never going to need this. I'm not going to need that. And then suddenly you do.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, we encourage, you know, everybody out there, especially when you know, if you have a family, obviously, but once you reach a certain age, it's not a bad idea, because, you know, your kids don't know what's going on. And maybe you want to make sure that, you know, that nobody goes to extreme measures to keep you alive. Now, you know, I don't want to become a, you know, a test tube sample somewhere. So we want to make sure that our family knows these things. And I think it's great that, you know, that your company provides that through your services all the way along the way. And that, you know, the idea, and I don't think many people think about this, you know, the roles that these social workers play inside of our medical care. You know, there's that and the navigators and whatever the terminology is that people use for those that are helping. And it doesn't cost you anything for this. That's the other thing. You know, you can get this advice for free. And hopefully at some point, if you do need to utilize their services, they're going to make sure that the vast majority of the services that residential is going to provide for you are covered under either your private insurance, or it's covered by the VA. And I think that that's something, because most of us, we don't know. You know, we say, oh, this is covered. Well, and then you suddenly find out, no, it's not.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you don't know what you don't know. And that's one of the great things about our services too, is it's either covered through, like we said, VA Pay, Optum, Medicare, and many other insurances that we accept. So there's really not much, there's no out of pocket cost to receive that kind of advice and these kind of services.
I think that's really, really, really important. Does anybody have anything else they want to say? I know we're coming up on about 3 or 4 minutes to go.
If I could say one thing just real quick, if you're listening, don't wait to go get care. Enroll with the VA, discover what benefits are available to you. We often hear, especially with our hospice team, with Nick and Michelle, people wait too long to understand what hospice actually is. So don't be afraid to have those kind of conversations.
Yeah, I think that is really important. I think so many of us have the misconception of what hospice care is. You know, we think, well, this is the end of the line, so this is where somebody will just come in and take care of me.
Yeah, just to piggyback off of what Nate said there, one of the things that we hear, that I hear at least most often is, I wish I would have started this sooner.
Yes.
I wish I would have started this sooner, you know. And it's a problem that we see that's ubiquitous, not just with the patients and the family themselves, but even with the providers, even with the physicians, the hospitals, the SNFs and stuff. You know, there seems to be a bit in this culture right now where we don't we just try to pretend if we don't talk about it, it'll never happen, kind of thing. But it's going to happen, right? So let's go out on our own terms and with the best quality and that we can, with the best quality of life that we can.
I agree with you, Nick. I want to. Anybody else have anything to say? We got 3 minutes to go, so I'm supposed to wrap this up here.
I just wanted to say, if I could, you know, circling back to hospice care, you know, the goals in care, having those conversations really brings a lot of dignity to the decision, you know, to start hospice, and really helping family, the patient, friends, you know, his or her, you know, community come together and rally that support for what's needed. We work really hard, again, with the individualized plan of care to provide exceptional care for pain and symptom management, wound care, you know, artificial feeding, you know, really what those needs are for the patient. So I think sometimes there's a misconception that when people elect the hospice benefit, that everything stops and, you know, the care becomes different, and it really doesn't. Care becomes elevated. There's a lot to offer, a whole team there, hospice and palliative certified doctors and clinicians.
Most beneficial, most informative. We've been talking for the last hour here with representatives of the residential healthcare group. They provide everything. When you're discharged, they've got the information for you. Their phone number, again, is 866-902-5854. Their website is residentialhealthcaregroup.com. They participate with the We Honor Veterans program. They just seem to be doing everything that we can or that they can to help our veteran community. And we're so grateful that there are organizations like residential healthcare out there. And it's just something that we all need to be aware of. We all need to be take care of it, you know. And if you've got a friend or a family member that is coming up on these decision times, I suggest that you give these folks a call. So I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. We've had Nate Barnett. We've had Nick Coppolino, Dustin Dodge. Hold on, I got to get here. Michelle Bedford and Leah Farber are all being on Veterans Radio today. We appreciate all that you do for the veteran community, and we're hoping to have you back on again.
Thank you so much, all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Go Air Force.
Yay, go Air Force.
Speaking of the Air Force, I think I got about 30 seconds, Carolyn. What's coming up? You got a meeting, right?
Yes, we launched the 181st chapter of the Air and Space.
Sorry.
We have a meeting.
Look at our website. I'm sorry, we got 5
all
seconds
right.
to go. So until next week, this is Dale Thornberry. For all of us here at Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.
Thank you.
Good night.